Hello, everybody. This is Glenn Treisman. I'm professor of psychiatry and director of the AIDS Psychiatry Service at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. And this is an IAS USA module on addressing anticipated adherence problems prior to hepatitis C treatment. In each section of this talk, I'll talk about adherence and the risk of viral resistance. I'll talk about factors negatively influencing adherence and methods to enhance adherence related to specific psychological and psychiatric problems that you're likely to encounter. I will begin by discussing adherence and the risk of viral resistance and treatment failure. Viruses with high turnover numbers like HIV and hepatitis C are capable of developing resistance to antiviral drugs. In the increasing era of direct-acting antiviral drugs for the treatment of hepatitis C, we will increasingly need to focus on adherence. Luckily, there's a very substantial history of methods to improve adherence from the world of HIV. There are a variety of factors that negatively influence adherence, and I'm going to talk about them in the next few slides. I want to start out by talking about adherence as a behavior. Taking medication is a behavior, and influences on behavior are complicated. There are lots of current oversimplified models of adherence, and I'm going to show you the one that I tend to use in this next slide. This slide is entitled Factors That Influence Medication Taking Behavior. I started out by talking about beliefs about illness and immediate life issues. These are two of the most common factors that influence adherence in HIV medications. Beliefs about illness include the patient's knowledge about HIV and the factors that exacerbate the illness have a profound influence on whether or not patients take their medications. Immediate life issues like feeding children, where you sleep at night, people around you, and their knowledge of your HIV infection were also shown to have a profound influence on whether or not patients took their medications. The third thing I have listed here is health awareness and commitment. Patients who are heavy drug users are relatively uncommitted to health behaviors. While there are certainly exceptions to that, in general, there's a negative correlation between heavy addiction and adherence to antiviral medications. In the process of working on adherence and HIV treatment, many patients become more and more aware of their health and become more committed to health behaviors. The fourth issue I have on this slide is in bold. It's negative and positive experience with healthcare and medications. Patients with a history of taking medications with negative outcomes, bad side effects, or unpleasant interactions with healthcare environments have a negative influence on adherence. The rest of the slide includes cultural attitudes toward medical care, intrinsic personality features, and social organization and support. This matrix has been shown to profoundly influence medication-taking behavior. However, successful medication-taking often influences these factors as well. Reduced viral loads, encouragement from providers, successful treatment, and improved physical health all feed back to improved medication-taking behavior. When thinking about this behavior of adherence to medications, medication-taking behavior, one can think about behaviors in the models that have been developed to think about behaviors in other settings. In the next slide, I show you the law of effect, which I also showed during talking about substance abuse. This is the probability that a behavior can be increased or decreased depending on its immediate consequences. Medication-taking behavior follows this same pattern. Patients who've had positive experience taking medications are more likely to take them. Patients who've had negative experiences are less likely to take them. The next slide, entitled Role of Experience, describes the fact that institutional health care can have a negative effect on the way patients view treatment. Many patients have experienced health care in jail settings, prison settings, juvenile delinquency treatment centers, and other places where health care can become extremely impersonal and adversarial. Cultural and personal assumptions have a strong influence on the way patients behave, but the way patients behave profoundly influences the outcome of medical care. If patients cooperate, they're more likely to have success, and if they have success, they're more likely to cooperate. In the next slide, I show that interventions for improved adherence include anything you do that reinforces behavior. This sometimes means frequent short visits, positive reinforcement for desired behavior, and careful avoidance of reinforcing undesirable behavior. An example of this is paying a great deal of attention to attention-seeking patients when they're not adherent, while paying less attention to them when they're adherent. Most people desire actually less attention from their healthcare provider and assume that if they do well, they'll get less attention. Some patients require more attention from their healthcare provider, and when they do poorly, if they get a great deal of attention, they will realize that doing poorly will get them attention that may be pathological, but may still be desirable. Your relationship with the patient can offset the outside negative healthcare influences that they may have experienced in previous treatment settings. In the next slide, I show something I call the cycle of life experience. I've used this cycle to describe the way experiences, both negative and positive, leads to meaning and assumptions. And the meaning and assumptions about the world leads to behavior, and that behavior leads to further experience. In the behavior setting, a hostile or difficult patient will often experience negative consequences of their behavior and find they are rebuffed in the healthcare setting. They take this to mean that they can't trust their doctors and nurses and assume that things are going to be negative and then behave accordingly. As you can see, you can intervene in any of these four places to improve this cycle. Patients have a positive experience with their healthcare provider. They take this to mean that they can trust their healthcare provider. The assumption is the healthcare provider is there to help them, and the behavior improves. If you talk to patients about the meanings of things and help them with psychotherapy to think about the meanings of things, you can change their assumptions about the healthcare setting. If you do cognitive therapy and change assumptions about the healthcare setting, you can change behavior. And perhaps most importantly, if you can change behavior, you can change the experience people have. Getting patients to behave in a way that is successful in the healthcare environment often leads to them having an improved experience and to better behavior in the long run. Interventions related to this include an understanding of the influences and previous experiences the patient has had and the validity of those experiences. That is, patients have often had very negative experiences in healthcare. Understanding this and trying to help them change their environment and their circumstances, as well as changing their experience, can reverse this problem. Interventions in meaning, in insight, assumptions, cognitive therapies, behavior, behavioral therapies, and experience, your response to behavior, will change the cycle and improve patients' outcomes. The role of temperament. People can be described as consequent avoidant versus reward seeking, now versus future focused, feeling versus function focused, cooperative versus uncooperative or disagreeable, distrustful versus trustful, conscientious versus spontaneously directed. These elements or traits of human beings are distributed in populations in normal distributions. Most people have an average or median amount of these traits, but many people are at the extremes of these traits, and it can be these extremes of traits that can make it difficult for us to treat them. I'm going to focus on one element of temperament, that is introversion and extroversion. And in the next slide, I show a simplified model of disposition. I have a normal distribution on this curve with introversion and extroversion at opposite ends. Introversion can be that described as that element of human beings that makes them consequent avoidant, future-directed, and function-directed, while extroversion can be described as those features that make people reward-directed, present-directed, and feeling-directed. Most human beings are in the middle. They are consequence and reward sensitive, they are future and present directed, and they are function and feeling directed. And they divide themselves along these foci based on the problem of the moment. However, some people are extremely introverted. They tend to be consequence avoidant, directed at the future and directed at function, and are relatively insensitive to reward now and feelings. While most healthcare providers are introverted, they aren't at the extreme end of introversion, but are sort of toward the middle of this curve. People with an excessive and dominant extroversion tend to be very reward-focused and relatively consequence-insensitive, focused on now with very little direction at the future, and focused on their feelings with very little consequence or function direction. In a sense, they let their feelings run their life. Because all traits are adaptive, you can easily see how being extroverted could make you more fun-loving, more successful as a rock star, more effective as a CEO of a corporation, and more effective as a politician. Successful politicians, CEOs, and rock stars tend to be extroverts. However, these same features can lead people with extroversion into great difficulty. It's always surprising to introverts when extroverts in the public eye get into terrible trouble because of impulsive behaviors. But they are, after all, extroverts, and their feelings tend to overwhelm them. It's often surprising how resilient these people can be. That is, they can be caught writing a check to a prostitute and a few months later be back trying to run for political office. This is because of their focus on now and their relative insensitivity to consequences. They get back on the ball toward the future, directed at trying to get the things they want. Unfortunately, extroversion does not go along very well with taking pills now so you'll feel better later. Extremely extroverted patients tend to be focused on feeling better immediately, and they tend to take medications that make them feel better immediately, and not be very patient with medications that take 6 to 12 to 18 to 24 weeks to work. In the world of HIV, we've learned that extroverted patients do better with taking medication if you focus on the things that they will get from taking medication rather than the consequences of not taking it. Positive reinforcement for when they take medication rather than negative reinforcement for when they don't. An intense focus on success rather than an intense focus on avoiding failure. These same issues are going to be very important in the treatment of patients with hepatitis C who are extremely extroverted. Getting them through their treatment can be extremely challenging. One of the strengths of hepatitis C treatment versus HIV treatment is that it's time limited. If you can get the patients through their 24 weeks or 12 weeks of treatment, they may be able to come off medications. Having a goal like a cure can be a profound motivator for patients who are extroverts. To improve adherence, therefore, reframe goals into those that fit the patient's temperament. Focus on rewards that will come from taking medications rather than problems that will come with not taking them. And conspiring with the patient to beat the system or to beat what they expect, they being previous healthcare providers, can be extremely useful techniques in helping these patients complete their treatment. Understanding that extroversion is an asset and that in many environments it's extremely useful to patients to be extroverted allows you to admire patients' extroversion while helping them shore up ways in which their extroversion might work against them in a medication-taking environment. In the next slide, I want to talk for a minute about the role of substance abuse. Although this issue is covered elsewhere, I want to remind the audience that current alcohol abuse and drug use is associated with poor outcomes and incomplete hepatitis C treatment. In HIV, substance abuse is associated with the development of viral resistance. There have been numerous studies in both HIV and hepatitis C to show that collaborative treatment improves outcome. That is, having HIV or hepatitis C providers in the same clinic with substance abuse and mental health providers improves outcome enormously. In hepatitis C, the best studied issue is substitution therapy, and this has been shown to have improved outcomes for hepatitis C as well as diminished hepatitis C transmission. Interventions that will help include ongoing assessment of substance abuse, ongoing toxicology screens, collaborative arrangements for substance abuse treatment if possible within the clinic, opiate substitution therapy for patients who are addicted to narcotics, and helping patients find and initiate 12-step based treatments such as NA and AA, which are free and often very effective in substance use disorders. I want to spend the last couple minutes talking about comorbid psychiatric disorders, particularly depression. Depression leads to poor adherence, and treatment reverses this. Treatment of depression that's successful also helps patient model drug-taking or medication-taking behaviors that lead to improved feelings and improved life. This helps patients to get ready to take hepatitis C treatment. Conditions like schizophrenia and bipolar illness are both associated with poor outcomes and poor adherence, and collaborative treatment has been shown to reverse this. I want to talk for just a moment about the interaction between addiction and depression. In the next slide, I have a simplified cartoon of behavior with an arrow directed at reward. We eat, sleep, and have sex in order to get brain rewards. Depression interferes with this pathway, as shown in the next slide. It disrupts the association between behavior and reward. However, drugs still will provide a brain reward. So behavior that includes drug taking, like addictive behaviors, still will provide a reward, even in patients with depression, which increases their liability to addiction. In the next slide, I show you that depression is intimately involved with hepatitis C, brain inflammation, sympathetic activation and stress, and reward sensitivity. And patients who are depressed have an increase in stimulus seeking, decreased self-preservation, day-night cycle disruption, and are more vulnerable to the depression induced by interferon. In the next slide, I describe some interventions to improve adherence. These include ongoing screening for depression. It's an episodic illness, and ongoing screening is imperative. And once patients begin treatment, any time in the course of their treatment, they can develop depression. It's important to treat depression, either directly or collaboratively. While some providers feel uncomfortable about giving antidepressants to patients, I can assure you that the expertise required to treat hepatitis C with interferon, ribavirin, and direct-acting agents will make learning to use antidepressants seem fairly easy. It's also important to know that depression is a highly stigmatized diagnosis. Patient education, sensitive support, and often group support is necessary in many settings and cultures. Telling a person that they're suffering from major depression can seem insulting to them and make them believe that you're not taking them seriously. Learning how to present major depression as a medical condition and attempting to destigmatize it as much as possible is very helpful in improving adherence. My take-home message is consist of these things. First, medication taking is a behavior and can be influenced profoundly by positive reinforcement and the things healthcare providers do that increase the likelihood that patients will take medications. Positive reinforcement includes your approval of the patient, your encouragement, your support, and your sense of the patient's worth. Other positive reinforcers include the availability of resources, forms being filled out, access to specialists, and other things that we do for patients routinely can be used to positively enforce adherence behaviors. Understanding the influences on behavior, including the complex mix of cultural, personal experience, reflexive resistance, and other factors that influence patients' attitudes toward healthcare and influence their pill-taking behavior, can help clinicians develop strategies for each individual patient. And lastly, collaborative treatment within the clinic, if possible, for addictions and depression has been shown to improve outcome enormously. And collaborative treatment is the way of the future for hepatitis C, HIV, and other complex infections that involve behavior.